Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, February 25th, 2022. Section A. Oil experts sound off on West Texas Intermediate crude hitting $100. West Texas Intermediate crude jumped over $100 a barrel Thursday for the first time since 2014. Prices topped out at $100.54 before President Joe Biden announced the U.S. is working with major consuming nations to coordinate a collective release from strategic petroleum reserves, while continuing to spare Russian supplies from sanctions, according to Bloomberg. But the price spike made clear $100 can again be a reality. Here's what three experts told oil editor Mel McEwen about another round with $100 oil. Kirk Edwards, president of Latigo Petroleums. It goes to show how lucky we are to live in the U.S. and in Texas with its abundance of oil and gas. We know how to produce in the U.S. Europe is at the beck and call of Russia and their policies. We don't need to be in the same situation. Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association. Energy's importance is what we should be thinking about at this time. The conflict highlights that we don't need obstacles to U.S. energy development. We need inspiration. And Ben Shepard, president of Permian Basin Petroleum Association. The U.S. imported 12% of its oil in 2021. I don't know what will happen with these sanctions. We are at a crossroads. Will we let oligarchs in Moscow dictate our energy future, or will we rely on peace-loving Midland for our energy? Ukraine crisis offers look into Permian importance, by Mel McEwen. If there was any question about the impact the resurgence of Permian Basin energy has or could have globally, current events between Ukraine and Russia offer an answer. Look at Ukraine now, said economist Ray Perryman. Think about what could happen 10 years from now. If in 10 years we get to the scale of liquefied natural gas exports to take natural gas from here to the Gulf, liquefy it, and ship it to Europe to provide enough to power Europe through winter, how much power does Russia then have? They control the natural gas that cools and heats Western Europe. Take that power away, and you take away an enormous geopolitical risk. The Permian Basin has been gifted with resources like no other place and has the intellectual capital, supply chain, and infrastructure to support energy, whether it's oil and gas, wind, or solar. The world will need that energy, he told an audience. He cited statistics that show by 2050 the world will need 37% more energy than today. While the amount of energy supplied by oil and gas may slip from 54% today to 48% then, Perryman noted that it will be a much bigger pie. The world will need Permian Basin oil to grow from about 5 million barrels a day today to 7 million barrels a day, and natural gas to grow from 20 billion cubic feet to 26 or even 30. And that production will be the cleanest in the world, he said, 47% cleaner, 60% cleaner when carbon capture and storage is factored in, and 57% cleaner than Middle East oil, and a whopping 74% cleaner than tight sands. We cannot get to where we have to in the world without hydrocarbons from here, but we need to do it as cleanly and as environmentally sensitively as we can. What is needed for the Permian to answer that global call for energy is a partnership with the government that will result in policies that encourage the responsible development of all types of energy. The same government agencies that say we need 26% annual growth in oil and gas is at the same time saying we can't use oil and gas. That part doesn't make sense. Policies are also needed that encourage the development of carbon capture and low carbon oil. Having addressed the E and G in ESG, he turned to the social part of the equation, telling his audience 6.4 billion people live in developing countries. Those developing countries will be responsible for 83% of new energy demand over the next 50 years. There are 3 billion people in this world that live in a bad way. Approximately 700 million, twice the U.S. population, survive on the equivalent of $1.90 a day. The only way their lives get better is through economic growth, making the pie bigger and giving them a slice. You can't grow without energy. The world needs the energy we produce. That's the social side, and to me, that's really powerful, and the human side of what we can do to help. Water Conference speakers detail research on seismicity by Mella McEwen. Seismic events have rattled the Permian Basin, beginning with a rash of quakes in Culberson and Reeves counties and heading northeast to the Midland-Odessa area. According to Earthquake.com, more than 255 have been reported in the area around Midland since last February. Seismicity around Midland-Odessa has been growing not only in frequency but in intensity. In late December, a 4.5 magnitude earthquake was reported north of Stanton. Culberson County has experienced more earthquakes than the rest of Texas combined. The rise in seismic activity has been linked to water disposal and, in some areas, to hydraulic fracturing, according to those at the Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference. How are we sure disposal wells trigger seismicity? Asked Heather Deshaun. To answer, she cited the experience of the Rocky Mountain Arsenal in Colorado in the 60s. Investigating a series of earthquakes, the arsenal found the pressures of the fluids lowered frictional resistance along established fault lines. But, she added, the largest earthquakes occurred 2 years after injection stopped. She currently serves as project lead for induced earthquake studies focused on understanding the causal factors and physical mechanisms leading to increased seismicity rates in North and West Texas. Her presentation focused on lessons learned from the spate of earthquakes in the Fort Worth Basin amid drilling activity in the Barnett Shale. There were only indicators of induced earthquakes near wells. Those earthquakes now occur at greater distances. There is no clear, easy solution that is productive of what fault will generate an earthquake and under what pressures, but we learned a lot about the size and orientation of faults. One takeaway is that very small changes in stress to the rocks can trigger an event. The numbers are very small, but the now retired quarterback Tom Brady put more pressure on a football than it would take to trigger an event. Mapping fault hazards and understanding their orientation is underway in the Midland Basin. For best data, she advised that there should be a monitoring station within 10 kilometers of an active fault paired with a regional seismicity monitor. Higher quality data and a willingness to communicate that data to other operators and to regulators is key to addressing seismicity. In counties experiencing seismic activity, potential causes differ. In Culberson County, seismic activity has been consistent with deep disposal wells, whereas activity in Reeves County appears linked to shallower disposal wells. There has been a rapid increase in seismic activities in the Midland Basin, which appear linked to deep disposal wells. As the Railroad Commission established 3 seismic response areas, Gardendale, Stanton, and North Culberson Reeves County, in response to activity, they have requested information from operators on injection volumes and pressures. Hydraulic fracturing, start and end times have also been requested in the Culberson area. Operators in the Culberson area have been meeting over the last 3 months to develop a response plan. The plan recently submitted includes a two-tiered approach of shallow disposal wells and deep disposal well response. The plan also contains significant reductions in deep well injections over the next 12 to 15 months. In the Stanton area, operators are still crafting a response plan. There is a strong recognition of industry collaboration on response. He noted that CISR, the Center for Integrated Seismicity Research at the Bureau of Economic Geology, has 20 industry sponsors. In addition, he said more public seismic monitors have been deployed to provide higher quality data, and in late 2019, the industry provided the Railroad Commission with its recommendations for best practices to mitigate or avoid seismicity. That increased reporting is being leveraged in the Culberson and Stanton area, and the industry is also leveraging that data and understanding to address the seismic activity around Midland and Odessa. The rise in activity and resulting reduction in injection volumes, rates, and pressures by the Railroad Commission in response have served to heighten the focus on the need to expand water optionality, recycling, and beneficial use. City Secretary honored for community impact by J.C. Lewis. The League of Women Voters honored City Secretary Amy Turner on Wednesday during the Making Democracy Work luncheon. Turner received the award, which is given once a year to a community leader. The Midland League of Women Voters has presented the award for more than a decade to those who have demonstrated that through professional work or volunteerism, ways in which to improve the community. President Emily Haleva said Turner has shared and implemented a vision of making Midland a fair place to live and has mobilized others to work with them to effect positive change in the values that exemplify the spirit and mission of the voters. Amy has a record and reputation for excellent character and integrity. She has shown qualities of patience, open-mindedness, firmness, understanding, compassion, and humility. She has a record of community involvement as well. Mayor Patrick Payton said one of the most important things Turner does for the mayor and council members is making sure council members stay on top of what needs to be done. She does things in a very nice and gentle way. He added that the term city secretary doesn't do justice to the work she completes. He also shared a story about when he entered her office one day and there was a dog sitting in the corner. One of the times I've enjoyed the most is going to her office one day, and it was a display of her heart. There was a dog sitting in her corner, which I guess she had just found. She has this dog sitting in the office, which is sort of reminiscent of what she has to do with every city council member, keeping us better than we are. Turner, who has been in her position in Midland for 12 years, will retire from her position in 12 months. At the time of publication, in a fact she enjoys sharing, she said she has been a city secretary for 21 years and her job is one of the most misunderstood professions. The city secretary, sometimes called the city clerk, is the oldest public profession, she said. The city secretary is the local official who administers many of the democratic processes, such as elections, access to records, and access to historical legislative actions, which ensures transparency for the public. We act as a compliance officer for federal, state, and local statutes. We also serve as the filing officer for campaign finance filings. Turner also manages the hotel occupancy grants that are given to nonprofits in the community, which is one of her favorite parts of the job. The bulk of her work is doing city council agendas. I'm very thankful and grateful to receive this because really my whole career has been about democracy and about helping the public to access information. Nonprofit provides prom dresses to students in need. By J.C. Lewis. 311 Ministries needs help from volunteers for its Perfect Promise program, which helps students shop for prom. The nonprofit currently needs help sorting and sizing the dresses from 1 to 5 p.m. Saturday at 311 Ministries. We take donated prom dresses and some that we purchase and give to girls who would not otherwise be able to afford a dress to go to the prom. said Sally Stafford, who also said, "This is the seventh year for the program. The program was designed to help young ladies who wouldn't be financially able to attend their high school prom. The nonprofit acknowledges this program strays away from simple everyday needs, but found the unique opportunity to help young women with low self-esteem or lack of self-confidence to make them feel like a princess, while praying for them and encouraging their success. We are a staff of two, and we have about 2,000 dresses that need to be organized. The nonprofit also recently moved the dresses from Crestview Baptist in storage while the new facility was being built. The dresses are now being sorted at the nonprofit's new warehouse. 311 Ministries is continuing to take donations of prom dresses, which can be dropped off at Legacy High School from Monday to Friday, 10 to 4, and at 311 Ministries from Monday to Thursday from 10 to 1. Miss Casey's is also assisting with the Perfect Promise program this year. Miss Casey's has been a longtime supporter of ours, and they're taking monetary donations for us to purchase makeup for the girls. When girls come in to get a dress, they'll get a goodies bag of makeup and beauty accessories. Shoppers can donate at Miss Casey's and then receive a coupon for 20% off one item at the store. Applications can be submitted to 311ministries.org, Perfect Promise, to book an appointment to shop for a prom dress starting in March. Safe Place holds groundbreaking for $22 million facility. Safe Place of the Permian Basin has broken ground on what will be its new home. Cliffy Beal, chairwoman of the building campaign, welcomed community members, donors, and board members, and highlighted what Safe Place means to the Permian Basin and the safe haven it is for those in need. Capital Campaign Chairman Chad Cooksey thanked all those who donated and volunteered their time to the nonprofit and how that helped make the new shelter a reality. Executive Director Carol Whalen spoke about the mission of Safe Place and how the new building will have more of an impact in keeping with its goal. Campaign committee members and employees then gathered around shovels and officially broke ground by flipping over the dirt after a short countdown. The $22 million facility will be finished in about a year and a half, and Safe Place of the Permian Basin hopes to open in the summer of 2023. According to Safe Place website, it provides secure and confidential emergency shelter for victims and their children. Partnership continues impactful support of Permian community. A commentary by editor Stuart Doreen. The Permian Strategic Partnership is on a roll. Last week, the PSP donated $10.5 million to the University of Texas Permian Basin to help with the shortage of healthcare professionals in the region. This week, it announced support of SkillPoint Permian Basin, which will offer rapid training programs in electrical, HVAC, and plumbing, among other trades, to Permian Basin communities in West Texas and Southeast New Mexico. Healthcare and creating a workforce that is right for the region are two top-tier concerns, and the PSP is meeting them head-on. It's what we have come to expect from the coalition of 16 member companies that, according to its website, is committed to safe and environmentally responsible operations and stands ready to participate in the discussions and decisions that will improve the quality of life in the region for generations to come. The PSP member companies include Apache, BPX Energy, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, Coterra Energy, Devon, Diamondback, Endeavor, EOG Resources, Halliburton, Occidental, Ovintiv, Pioneer, Plains All American, Schlumberger, and XTO Energy. The PSP has dedicated tens of millions of dollars to help those essential needs since it was created in late 2018. Previous action includes contributing $16.5 million to help bring IDEA Public Schools to Midland, Odessa, and $6 million to Texas Tech University Health Science Centers for the expansion of a rural residency program. The PSP also worked with state leaders and local government organizations to bring $600 million in road funding to the entire region. It doesn't matter if the price of oil has been up or down. PSP continues to work with an eye toward the long-term future and giving the region a benefactor that likely makes other regions envious. We have long said Midland benefits because of the work of foundations and long-term giving from an industry that realizes it has a responsibility to make Midland and the region better places for decades to come. The PSP proves this point over and over. Transportation, healthcare, housing, workforce, and education are among the focus areas the PSP has impacted in Midland, Odessa, and across the Permian Basin in both Texas and New Mexico. The Permian Strategic Partnership is on a roll, and the region is better because of it. Colvin Bing Co. Domingo passed away on February 20th. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Friday, February 25th, at Nally Pickham Welsh Funeral Home. Memorial Mass will take place 10 a.m. Saturday, February 26th, at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickham Welsh Funeral Home. Sherry Lord Parker passed away on February 12th. A celebration of life will be held March 26th. Time and place is pending.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, February 25th, 2022. Downtown making an impact on Odessa. A standing room only crowd gathered at the Rose Copper Building Thursday to celebrate a new 5-year plan for downtown Odessa and to applaud the steps that have already been taken to turn the area into a destination. Mayor Javier Jovan, Craig Stoker, chairman of the Tax Increment Reinvestment Zone, and Casey Hallmark, the new executive director of Downtown Odessa, each took to the stage during the 6th annual State of Downtown Odessa address. Since 2016, a great deal of money has been invested into the downtown area, including nearly $2.2 million to rebuild roads, $1.28 million to bury utilities, and more than $511,000 to sink new water and sewer lines, Stoker said. 42 new businesses opened during the same period, including the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, which anchors downtown and had a $1.7 million economic impact on Odessa in January due to conferences, Stoker said. Stoker compared the improvements made to Odessa, both those, quote, visible and invisible, end quote, to preparing a canvas to be painted on. Now that Odessa's canvas has been prepared, the painting of a masterpiece can commence, he said. Stoker also provided the crowd a few details from the new master plan, which was scheduled to be unveiled during an event later in the day. He spoke about improving downtown's, quote, walkability, end quote, with helpful signs, beautifying the area with public art and landscaping. He also spoke about increased housing and the city's plan to work with Odessa College to establish a community space on 4th Street that will feature events, food trucks, and splash pads. Hallmark, who began her new job January 3rd, told the crowd she is there to help downtown businesses and wants to hear their ideas. She's already considering creating a downtown business association and community calendar because of what she's heard so far, the native Odessan said. Quote, I am in love with our city. We live in the greatest city ever, and my job is to help everybody else fall in love with it as much as I have, end quote, Hallmark said. She would like downtown to be a place where people can spend their entire day because there's so much to do, Hallmark said. Those gathered also honored John Harriage, the Downtown Odessa Volunteer of the Year, La Katrina and Company, the new Downtown Business of the Year, and Cruz Castillo, who received the Legacy Award. Organizers of the event also thanked Alexa Mulekas, Downtown Odessa Event Coordinator, and Audrey Lujan, Downtown Odessa's Executive Administrative Assistant, for all of their hard work. High school students head to state BPA contest. A total of 35 students from Odessa and Permian high schools will participate in the State Business Professional Association March 2nd through 5th in Fort Worth. OHS will have 16 students and PHS 19. They will join more than 3,400 conference delegates from across the state to participate in state-level business skill competitions, general sessions, and the state officer candidate campaigns and elections. They can also sightsee while they are there. Students from the Texas Association's Regional Leadership Conference in San Angelo have qualified to participate at the state-level conference, a news release said. The conference stresses business, workforce, education, and training, which members of the local chapter of Business Professionals of America at Permian have received, the release said. OHS career and technical education teacher Brittany Molinar said students are prepared with interview skills, presentations, business management, PowerPoint, and many others. Alicia Dominguez and Michael Horton also are CTE teachers and advisors. Quote, we're super excited for the kids. They worked really hard. We started preparing in November, December. We competed in regionals in San Angelo January 21st. We took 16 students, and they all made it this year to state competition, end quote, Molinar said. She added that she doesn't know what the secret was, but the students worked really hard. Quote, they were studying. They were preparing before school, after school. They would even come during their lunch, end quote, Molinar said. Competition was virtual last year due to COVID, and OHS didn't participate. Quote, I think they were just eager this year, end quote, Molinar said. Mackenzie Harris, a 16-year-old junior, is in her first year with BPA. She said she is excited and kind of nervous to make it to state, quote, but mostly excited, end quote. Brittany Galindo, a 17-year-old senior in her first year with BPA, said Molinar used to coach her in dance and coached her right into the organization. Quote, I was very proud of myself, yet shocked. I think it was really cool to see that I made it with all my friends, end quote, Galindo said. She added that it is extra special making it as a senior. Kenya Alvera, a 17-year-old junior, also in her first year with BPA, said she wants to go into the medical field. Quote, it's exciting, end quote, Alvera said of making it to state. She said she felt business professionals would help gain experience for the world outside school, and it has. Ann Kennedy, CTE department head slash business education teacher, is taking 19 students to Fort Worth. They usually take 40 or 50, but COVID changed that. Quote, last year, they did it all remote, and so we ended up with just 5 students. This year, we feel like we've come back quite a bit, end quote, Kennedy said. Even though they are headed to Fort Worth with fewer students than they usually do historically, Kennedy said the organization always attracts, quote, really good kids that are willing to go above and beyond what you're doing in the classroom, end quote. To qualify, Kennedy said, there are 55 different contests from financial and accounting to payroll accounting. There are also computer contests in Microsoft Word, Excel, Advanced Excel, Java, and many others. From the regional competition in San Angelo, the top 2 in a judged event go to state, and in a tested subject, the top 4 go to state. State will be in Fort Worth, and from that, the top 5 in a tested event will go to nationals May 4th through 8th in Dallas. And in a tested subject, it's the top 2. Along with the contest, Kennedy said the students can attend sessions to get information on college and will likely go to the Fort Worth Zoo and the mall. Quote, there are 6 advisors going, and we have to proctor the testing and grade the test. All of us are required to do that when we go as well. A lot of times we have kids that are doing presentations, so we're watching them do their presentations and practice and get ready for their individual contest, end quote, Kennedy said. Kennedy added that the skills students learn in BPA are useful for when they enter the workforce. Kyler Fife, a 17-year-old senior at PHS, said he had been in BPA for 3 years. He didn't take part last year. Quote, I think it's a very exciting experience as well as somewhat overwhelming because you want to be prepared. You want to do great, but also you're just grateful to be there and have the opportunity to compete with others who made it there as well, end quote, Fife said of going to state. Fife is competing in personal financial management, so he will take a test on finances. He also is on the economic research team, where they will talk about inflation and the issues the federal government is having with it. Quote, I just really enjoy the professional environment. You get dressed up in professional clothes, you go and you talk to judges, and you take a test. It's almost like it provides real-world experience for what life is going to be like after high school. It just gives you a new sense of professionalism that you might not get in high school, end quote, Fife said. Swetha Kasavan, a 17-year-old senior, joined BPA as a junior. Her sister was in BPA, and her sister and Kasavan's friends also wanted her to join because they thought it would be a good organization. Quote, BPA has helped me a lot with things that I wouldn't normally learn outside of school with finance and accounting, end quote. For example, Kasavan said. Kasavan will be competing in economic research team with Fife. Quote, basically what this event is about is we give a speech and we had to write a 6-page paper over inflation due to COVID, end quote, Kasavan said. Ray reveals recent campaign funds. State rep hopeful owes $500 fine for day late filing. Filing his state financial report a day late and incurring a $500 fine, State Representative candidate Casey Gray of Odessa reported that he had accepted $2,614 in contributions from January 21st through February 19th and had spent $24,911 in his campaign to unseat incumbent Representative Brooks Landgraf. Having failed to meet the 5 p.m. Tuesday filing deadline, Gray told the Texas Ethics Commission in Austin that he had borrowed $40,000, $20,000 from himself, and more recently $20,000 from an unnamed source. $28,000 in reserve money for the race ending Tuesday, with District 81 balloting in the Republican primary. The 39-year-old disabled military veteran reported paying $152 for fuel, $1,090 to Accelevate 2020 of Washington, D.C. for consulting, $300 to AmeriFlush of Odessa for toilet services for an event, $916 to AeroPrint of Printing of Odessa, $122 to Best Buy, $55 to the City of Odessa for events, $70 to the Copper Kettle Restaurant, $1,440 to Augustine DeAnda of Odessa for campaign sign stands, $27 to the Dumplings y Amigos Restaurant of Odessa, $77 to the Ector County Republican Women's Club, $1,325 to Facebook of Palo Alto, California, and $80 to Flying J, and $181 to HEB for fuel. Also, $135 to Hacienda Vieja of Odessa for food for a film crew, $143 to the Holiday Inn in San Marcos, $1,934 to ICA Radio of Odessa for advertising, $429 to J&J Steel of Odessa for signs, $2,190 to Main Event Sports for air bounce houses for a voters registration event, $200 to Phillips 66 for fuel, $6,193 to David Padilla for consulting, $279 to Raptor Equipment Rentals of Odessa, $269 to Southwest Airlines, $729 to Sam's Club, $1,846 to Vital Signs of Odessa, $500 to Winkler Loving County for a donation to a family that had lost their home in a fire, $3,200 to Adrian Torres of Odessa for signs. Gray's expenses between January 1st and January 20th were $1,446 to Arrow Printing, $125 to Facebook, $340 to Finch Media of Midland, $11 to Microsoft of Redmond, Virginia, and $464 to USPS of Odessa, and $11,850 to Vital Signs. 2022 SheCan International Women's Day Conference. The Odessa Chamber of Commerce and Sewell Family of Companies will host the inaugural SheCan International Women's Day Conference in memory of local community leader Adela Vasquez. The conference will be hosted at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center from 7:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. March 8th. The half-day conference will have breaks between speakers to shop with local vendors in the lobby. Our featured speakers this year include local community leader Peggy Dean, Dr. Lori Rice Spearman, the ninth president of Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, and the first female president in the Texas Tech University system, and Kelly Masters, an attorney, NFL sports agent, and founder and president of KMM Sports. Names in the news. ECSO, Ector County Sheriff's Office Sergeant Mike Lopez with Patrol Shift 3 was recently promoted to Shift 4 Lieutenant. New Assistant Chief. Matt Muehlbrad is the new Assistant Chief at the University of Texas Permian Basin. He previously was the Lieutenant for the Ector County Sheriff's Office where he worked for 20 years. Graduate. Iowa. Stacey A. Church of Stanton graduated with a Master of Arts in Religion from Graceland University during the fall semester. President's List. Bangor, Maine. Grace Emig of Seminole has been named to Hudson University President's List for the fall semester. Emig was enrolled in Houston's Bachelor of Science in Exercise Science / Doctor of Physical Therapy program. Students who make the president's list must be enrolled as an undergraduate student, carry a full-time load of 12 credit hours, complete all attempted courses in the time allotted for the semester, and achieve a 3.80 to 4.0 semester grade point average. Credits from pass-fail classes do not qualify toward meeting the minimum credit hour requirement. Sidelines. More than 24 speakers and panelists from across the world, the Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference wrapped up Thursday at the Midland County Horseshoe and Pavilion. There were about 450 registered participants and panel discussions on everything from produced water to environmental, social, and governance issues to seismic activity. Jim Woodcock was expecting with COVID. Woodcock said there were people from Japan, Finland, and around the U.S. The conference connects industry leaders, experts, and professionals to exchange best practices and cutting-edge approaches for the use of water in oil and gas production. The mission is to facilitate collaboration and innovative strategy development for the improved use, recovery, and recycling of water in oil and gas production. Information from the conference. The Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference is a program of the University of Texas Permian Basin, allowing students at UTPB to directly benefit from the conference proceeds. Although it wasn't on the agenda, the Russian invasion of Ukraine was on the minds of those attending Thursday. Quote, so it's kind of actually funny. We wrote a column in August of last year talking about Midland or Moscow. Will the future of the energy world be dictated in terms by Russian oligarchs in Moscow or by peace-loving free markets in Midland? We knew that was going to be the case. Not to this extent, frankly. It felt more like a geopolitical situation rather than an actual war. But I hate to say this wasn't unprecedented, and it wasn't surprising. And so I think, you know, operators across the Permian have been actively engaged and prepared to operate to the best of our abilities, despite some changes in federal perspectives and, of course, with a shifting focus in energy production. But at the end of the day, there's no question that petroleum and its products, oil and natural gas, produced right here in the Permian Basin, represent the best opportunity for our America and our allies, end quote. Michael Lozano, Communications and Government Affairs Director of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, said. Lozano said currently the United States still imports Russian oil. Quote, that's mitigated by domestic production. We produce in the Permian in both Texas and New Mexico about 5 million barrels a day. It's record amounts at this time. We continue to see growth in the sector, and I think we can continue to expect growth in the Permian, end quote, Lozano said. Quote, it's the fastest growing operations center in the country. Just yesterday, I saw there were quite a few LNG vessels that are transporting Permian-produced gas. That's liquefied natural gas from the U.S., and they've shipped it from Southeast Asia to Europe overnight. That's a huge shift. I think it's representing very real demand in Eastern and Western Europe that is going to come as a result of ongoing sanctions, end quote, Lozano said. He acknowledged that the work the men and women of the basin do in the oil field will take on even more significance. Quote, I think we've always viewed the work here as really important. I think it's now added importance because it's not just for domestic production and jobs. It's national security and global security. The reality is this is a real commodity, and operators and this resource is going to be needed. It was either going to be produced by our less than friendly counterparts across the globe or our enemies. Whether it was OPEC or OPEC Plus, which includes Russia, when it came to that, it was either going to be them or it was going to be domestic production. And I think we agree that free market produced oil and gas and in America is the better option, end quote, Lozano said. Woodcock said the conference featured a great group of speakers. Quote, each one is addressing different aspects of water, primarily produced water, how it can be broken down, used again, the steps it goes through. We have a lot of different ideas about that. We have a man from the Colorado School of Mines that has spent a lot of time working on it. We have some people from companies who actually try to get the water to the point where we can use it for something, either agriculture or hopefully eventually drinking water. But it's a huge, huge issue, end quote, Woodcock said. 40 million barrels that produce water a day that we have to do something with. Not many people realize that each barrel of oil we produce makes 4 to 6 barrels of produced water we have to do something with. End quote. He, quote, it's a real issue as we begin to produce more oil. We're going to see this become a larger issue because we'll have more and more barrels of produced water to do something with. The thought is that produced water being reinjected is creating some of the seismicity issues that we're seeing. And so I think we're getting some good ideas. People are real enthusiastic about the speakers, about the things that are happening here, what they're hearing. There's a lot of mixing of people after the presentation, so I think so far it has been productive, end quote. This is the fourth Water and Energy Conference. Quote, this is, I think, the most productive that we've had. We really zeroed in on some things that are of huge importance to this industry and also to our area, end quote. He said the invasion of Ukraine by Russia has prompted a lot of talk, but it hasn't been on stage as a topic. Quote, but the fact is we're going to need, no matter what people in Washington say, we're going to need to produce more oil here, end quote. Woodcock. He added that he's seen a report that the U.S. gets 6 to 10 million barrels of oil a day from Russia. Quote, that's a huge issue that we have to look at. I just hope we're able to put together in Washington some consortiums and really look at the problems and issues and give us some guidance on how to move ahead in a constructive, productive way. In obituary, San Juana Janie Gomez, Midland. San Juana Janie Gomez, age 66, passed from this life at Midland Memorial Hospital on Saturday, February 19, 2022. She was born in Shelley, Idaho on Tuesday, June 7, 1955, to the late Inez Bordello and Ascension Balderas. Janie worked in retail sales. Those left to cherish her love and memory are her sons, Johnny Gomez and wife Maria of Midland, and Prahatis Gomez Jr. and wife Lorena Ramos of Odessa, daughters Angel Gomez of Odessa and Olga Olivia Salazar and husband Jesse of Odessa, and her sister, Rosemary Bordello, and husband John Hawkins of La Mesa, grandchildren Miguel Angel Gomez, Auden Joel Gomez, Juan Isaiah Gomez, Janet Isela Gomez, Javier Isabel Gomez, Marobi Salazar, Jaden Salazar, Joshua Salazar, and Jada Salazar, great-grandson Jeremiah Isaiah Gomez, and one great-grandbaby on the way. Her fur babies, Phoebe and Kiki, and numerous extended family members and friends. Janie is preceded in death by her parents, brother Joe Angel Bordello, and husband Prahatis Lopez Gomez. Visitation begins on Saturday, February 26, 2022, at noon at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel. Funeral services will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. on Monday, February 28, 2022, at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West, and condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Our comfort is knowing that Janie now walks with her mom and Jesus. Death notices. Imogene Shelton Courtney, Odessa. Imogene Shelton Courtney, 89, of Odessa, died Monday, February 21st, 2022, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m., February 28th, 2022, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Reverend James McCrary is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Carla Jo Parks Durie, Odessa. Carla Jo Parks Durie, 71, of Odessa, died Sunday, February 20th, 2022, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. February 26, 2022, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor Griffin Jones is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Brad Allen Van Cleve, Odessa. Brad Allen Van Cleve, 64, of Odessa, died Thursday, November 11th, 2021, in Odessa. Celebration of life will be held at 4 p.m. Saturday, February 26, 2022, at South 40 Banquet Hall, located at 2130 Andrews Highway, Odessa, 79761. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
PSP gives $10.5 million to university programs. The Permian Strategic Partnership donated $10.6 million to the University of Texas Permian Basin to help with the shortage of healthcare professionals in the region. The donation will cover tuition and fees for undergraduate majoring in nursing, pre-med, pre-dental, and pre-pharmacy through a competitive, renewable four-year scholarship. The UTPB nursing and pre-med program expansions come at a time when there is a great shortage in our region, said Tracy Bentley, president and CEO of the PSP. We are seeing nurses come burned out from strenuous hours and increased stress. Once established, the program will add up to 60 nursing graduates and 60 pre-med graduates by 2027 and annually thereafter. We look forward to building the local pipeline with our partners at UTPB. Funding is awarded through a combination of federal, state, and institutional funds to qualifying students. PSP scholarship candidates must have a grade for an average of 2.5 or higher, be a permanent resident of the Permian Basin, be admitted to UT Permian Basin. For nursing, must also be admitted to the School of Nursing. For pre-health, must declare pre-health major and maintain a cumulative GPA of 2.5 or higher each semester.
This is Jane reading for the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, February 23rd, the Health and Wellness section. Heart health has impact on chronic wounds. Your heart affects every aspect of your health, including your ability to heal wounds. Your heart circulates oxygen and nutrient-rich blood throughout your body. Cardiovascular diseases damage blood vessels and cause blockages that obstruct the flow of blood. This decreased blood flow hinders the delivery of oxygen and nutrition needed for proper wound healing. Currently, 48% of American adults, 21.5 million people, suffer from cardiovascular diseases such as coronary artery disease, peripheral artery disease, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol. People with diabetes are 2 to 4 times more likely to develop cardiovascular disease. There are more than 8 million Americans currently living with a chronic wound, and most of them have 3 to 4 other chronic conditions, including cardiovascular diseases and diabetes. These people are at high risk for complications without proper wound care. An unhealed wound on the foot or leg can lead to amputation. In fact, 82% of lower leg amputations are because of poor circulation of the affected limb. The American Heart Association aims to reduce amputations 20% by 2030 through increased peripheral artery disease awareness, diagnosis, and early intervention of cardiovascular-related wounds. It's a mission that the Wound Management Center at Midland Health and Healogics are proud to share. You can take steps to prevent conditions that may affect the health of your heart and proper wound healing. The Wound Management Center at Midland Health offers the following tips to live a heart-healthy life. Eat healthy. Low-fat, high-fiber foods are good for your heart. Eat a variety of fruits, vegetables, beans, and whole grains every day. Be active. Walk, run, dance, swim. Find a way to get moving for at least 30 minutes every day. Exercise helps you maintain a healthy weight. Take care. Be good to yourself. Practice positive self-talk. Make sleep a priority. Reduce stress with fun hobbies. Stop smoking and all use of nicotine. Get screened. See your health care provider at least twice a year. Ask about screenings for blood pressure, cholesterol, and diabetes. If you or someone you know is living with a cardiovascular disease, it is especially important to detect wounds early. Check your feet regularly for any sores or wounds and seek specialized wound care to prevent possible infection, hospitalization, and amputation because of poor circulation. For more information, contact the Wound Management Center at Midland Health, F. Marie Hall Outpatient Center at 4214 Andrews Highway, Suite 220. Call 432-221-4850 today for an appointment. Healogics is the U.S. leading provider of wound care and is a proud partner with Midland Health for wound care. This is Jane reading for the Midland Reporter Telegram on Wednesday, February the 23rd, from the Health and Wellness section. Study: COVID-19 shots unlikely to prompt rare inflammation in kids. COVID-19 vaccines are unlikely to trigger a rare inflammatory condition linked to coronavirus infection in children, according to an analysis of U.S. government data published Tuesday. The condition, formerly known as multisystem inflammatory syndrome in children, involves fever plus symptoms affecting at least 2 organs and often includes stomach pain, skin rash, or bloodshot eyes. It's a rare complication in kids who have had COVID and very rarely affects adults. The condition often leads to hospitalization, but most patients recover. first reported in the United Kingdom in early 2020. It is sometimes mistaken for Kawasaki disease, which can cause swelling and heart problems. Since February 2020, more than 6,800 cases have been reported in the U.S., according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. As part of COVID-19 vaccine safety monitoring, the CDC and U.S. Food and Drug Administration added the condition to a list of several potential adverse events of special interest. A few cases reported in people with no detectable evidence of coronavirus infection prompted researchers at the CDC and elsewhere to undertake the new analysis, which was published Tuesday in The Lancet Child and Adolescent Health. The possibility that the vaccines could somehow prompt the condition is only theoretical, and the analysis found no evidence that it did, said co-author Dr. Buddy Creech, a Vanderbilt University pediatric infectious disease specialist who is leading a study of Moderna shots in children. We don't know the exact contribution of the vaccine to these illnesses, Creech said. Vaccine alone, in absence of a preceding infection, appears not to be a substantial trigger. The analysis involves surveillance data for the first 9 months of COVID-19 vaccination in the U.S., from December 2020 through August 21. During that time, the FDA authorized Pfizer's COVID-19 shots for ages 16 and up, expanded that in May to ages 12 through 15, and authorized Moderna and Johnson & Johnson shots for ages 18 and up. More than 21 million people ages 18 to 20 received at least one vaccine during that time. 21 of them developed the inflammatory condition afterward. All had received Pfizer shots, the analysis found. 15 of the 21 had laboratory evidence of a previous COVID-19 infection that could have triggered the condition. This is Jane reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, February 23rd, from the Health and Wellness section. Study: AI outdoes radiologists identifying hip fractures. When it comes to hip fractures, time is of the essence. Delays in surgery are associated with the risk of death and pressure sores, and patients with broken hips should ideally get surgery within 48 hours. But radiologists are in short supply, and the national shortage is exacerbated by a spiking demand for radiology services. And rushed radiologists and human error can lead to the improper identification and classification of hip fractures. Artificial intelligence could help, suggests a recent study. When researchers pitted machine learning against human radiologists, the computer won, classifying hip fractures 19% more accurately than human experts. The study, published in Nature Scientific Reports, was conducted in the United Kingdom. Like the United States, it has an aging population and hip fractures rise along with age. There are an estimated 300,000 hip fractures every year in the United States, and that number is expected to rise to more than 500,000 in 2040. Researchers had a minimum of two clinicians classifying over 3,600 hip radiographies, but they were no match for a prior pair of computer models trained to do the same task. This is Jane reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram on Wednesday, February 23rd, from the Health and Wellness section. Samaritan Counseling Center. Young adults struggle with mental health. According to recent information released by the CDC, findings indicate that young adults between the ages of 18 to 24 have been more likely to experience mental health problems related to COVID-19 than any other age group. Per the online survey from the CDC, 63% of young adults have at some point experienced significant symptoms of anxiety or depression. About a quarter of this group says the symptoms experience led them to start or have an increase in substance use. There is growing concern among some of the health officials that this could eventually put some of this age group at risk for developing COVID-19 related PTSD. The stresses related to COVID-19 have been felt by all, but this age group seems to be more acutely affected. This could mean that the pandemic might have a long-lasting impact on the mental health of young adults. One of the theories currently being proposed for why this is occurring with this age group is that young adulthood is already a difficult transition for a lot of people in terms of attempting to navigate choices such as higher education, beginning a professional career, building relationships, and potentially starting a family. COVID-19 has just added one more difficulty to already difficult stage. Another issue that has been brought up is that there has been a rising trend of loneliness among young adults that COVID-19 has exacerbated. It has been proposed that young adults experience more loneliness because they are in a transition from their family of origin or their inherited family to the family they will create on their own, their chosen family. This life stage transition can create gaps or inconsistency in social support for young adults. COVID-19 has created even more problems in this area due to social distancing and other safety measures that people have followed during the pandemic. Relationships have also been strained because people have different views than some of their family members and friends on what is proper to do regarding what safety measures to follow. On a positive note, young adults are more likely to seek out help for mental health problems than older generations. If you are experiencing any problems with your mental health, regardless of your age, please call Samaritan Counseling Center, 432-563-4144. This is Jane reading for the Midland Reporter Telegram on Wednesday, February 23rd, from the Health and Wellness section. Fox News' Cavuto returns to work after bout with COVID-19. Fox News host Neil Cavuto has returned to work after surviving a bout of COVID-19 with pneumonia that he says included time in an intensive care unit and some touch-and-go periods. Cavuto, who hosts the 4 p.m. Eastern hour on Fox News Channel and 2-hour program at noon on the Fox Business Network, was back on the air Monday after being off since the week of January 10th. Cavuto, 63, is a cancer survivor who has multiple sclerosis and said he was vulnerable to the coronavirus despite being vaccinated. It was his second case of COVID-19. It really was touch and go, Cavuto said. Some of you who've wanted to put me out of my misery darn near got what you wished for. Cavuto said doctors told him that if he had not been vaccinated, he would not have survived because it provided some defense. While some personalities on Fox have promoted vaccine skepticism, Cavuto said that he was not here to debate vaccinations for you. He said he owed viewers an explanation about what he had gone through after asking for privacy throughout his illness. This is Jane reading for the Midland Reporter Telegram on Wednesday, February 23rd, from the Health and Wellness section. Loneliness increases risk of heart disease for older women. For older women, being lonely and socially isolated can increase the chance of developing heart disease by as much as 27%, according to research published in the journal JAMA Network Open. The findings add heart disease to a list of potential health effects of loneliness and isolation that include dementia and mental health issues such as anxiety and depression. Data from nearly 58,000 postmenopausal women who were tracked for more than a decade showed that, independently, social isolation increased heart disease by 8% and loneliness increased it by 5%. But the effect was much stronger for those who reported high levels of both feelings, giving them a 13% to 27% higher risk for cardiovascular problems than women with low levels of both. Heart disease is the leading cause of death for U.S. women, responsible for 1 to 5 deaths, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The researchers said that 1/4 of adults 65 and older are socially isolated, women more often than men, and one-third of those 45 and older feel lonely. A socially isolated person is not always lonely, and a lonely person may not always be socially isolated.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.